Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Hello, you. Welcome to the UK Tech Weekly Podcast, the UK's premier audio noise, giving you a hot blast of tech every Friday. The UK Tech Weekly Podcast is an infotainment tincture from the editors of PC Advisor, Techworld, Macworld UK, and Computerworld UK. You can find us on Acast, on SoundCloud, on iTunes, and pretty much everywhere you get podcasts. Every Friday, we bring you no more than 40 minutes of informed tech chat on the hot tech topics of the past 7 days. So don't forget to subscribe, review, and tell your friends. I'm Matt Egan, Editorial Director of IDG UK. And today I'm delighted to be joined in conversation by two of our knifiest editors. Great Scott! Is it a ghost? No, but it's just as scary. It's Scott Carey, online editor of techworld.com.
Hello.
Hello, Dave. Is it a nice warm hug? No, but it's just as nice. It's David Price, Deputy Editor of Macworld UK.
Hello, Matt.
Today we're going viral and shouting Yahoo! So let's go.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
David Price, I have a cold, but don't worry, it's not infectious, it's viral. Why might that be a good metaphor for something we're calling Shazam?
We're absolutely not calling it Shazam.
There's been a couple of interesting things this week, which sort of show the two sides of viral sensations, as people always call them. And the one I think possibly you're referring to is FaceZam, which has turned out to be a hoax, rather. Well, sort of disappointingly, but also reassuringly. Because FaceZam was supposedly going to be maybe the creepiest. I mean, there's a lot of candidates for this, but maybe the creepiest app concept I've heard, which was that you could take a photo of a stranger just anywhere, and then the app would immediately search against the image data on Facebook, on profile pics, and it would show you who that person was and let you friend them or whatever on Facebook and basically stalk them, which, you know, everybody found pretty repellent and stalkerish. And
did everybody find it repellent and stalkerish, though?
Well, I suppose I could be in a sort of bien pensant bubble here, but most people
wondered if that was kind of the reason why it was floated out there, was because, like, I some reaction I saw was to do with the convenience.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, God, that's a bit alarming.
It is, I mean, and that's the point, I guess. I don't know.
Well, the interesting thing was that you look back on it now and you can see all the clues, because like one of the things that the CEO, not really the CEO of the not really company, but the fake CEO said, was that I think privacy no longer exists in the public society.
Yeah.
Which is obviously just an awful thing to say, but it was presented as like a marketing slogan almost. But I think, yeah, you're right. There are some people that do have certainly complicated attitudes to privacy. And I remember that on our internal Slack messaging, I immediately posted the video of Eric Schmidt, who is a bit of a personal bugbear of mine, commenting on privacy and saying that if people don't want everything they do to be publicised, then they shouldn't do it in the first place, which is, you know, pretty horrendous. So I think they were trying to make a serious point.
Yeah. Who was they? Do we know? Is it just?
It was like a marketing agency.
Yeah,
wasn't
it's often PR or marketing.
But no, I'm not. No, they don't get
credit
for that.
It's so annoying when people do that. But yeah, it was a proof of concept.
The thing that amazed me—well, it shouldn't really amaze me—but the thing that I found about this was the amount of media organisations that absolutely hook, line, and sinker for this.
Yeah,
and it actually, to the point where it went through like the three stages of virality, where there was the initial like news report, oh, this is the app that lets you do this.
Yep.
But I actually eventually saw some like think pieces like, this is why this is the death of privacy. And it was all from like a fake app announcement.
Well, there's actually a fourth step now, which is the Mashable think piece about, even though it's a hoax, it still raises serious questions.
we should come back to those steps of virality, because I think they're interesting in and of themselves. But we've seen other hoaxes like this before, haven't we? I'm trying to think. There have been apps and things like that.
There's been a few recently with videos where there was a video of a woman ripping a wing mirror off a van. And it was basically set up by like an agency to try and raise awareness of like misogyny on the streets. But again, it just picked up hook, line and sinker. Daily Mail published it in full, you know, with their sensationalist headline or whatever. And it went across all the media organisations without anyone checking.
They've kind of got a guess out now, haven't they? Which, to be fair, we do as well, but for different reasons. But is that, so I remember all the tabloids covered that as sort of fact. And then investigated, or then at least it was presented to them that it wasn't everything it seemed to be, and then they just sort of tweaked the headlines and stuff like that, but having their cake and eat it, essentially.
Well, they were never punished for it. That's not really a reason why they should be punished, but there's no downside.
Yeah, exactly. They get rewarded.
To getting caught hook, lying, and line of sinker by it is that you still get the page for you.
I'm sure there have been like fake products, though, over the past couple of years, and I really ought to have researched that.
Well, yeah, so there's... I did do some research.
Excellent.
There's a product, a fake product called iPhone, a Table Connect for iPhone, which is supposedly this, you know, full size table with a little, it's quite a few years old, had a little 30 pin connector for an iPhone. And you plug your iPhone in, and then whatever's on the iPhone is mirrored full size on this huge table. And then you can swipe across the table and interact with the table. And the funny thing about this is that they have since made a real product that kind of approximates to what that is, because there was
it's a bit like the Surface table, actually, which Microsoft
does. Totally, it's something that could be done, but at the time there wasn't really the technology to make it feasible. They just did it as a hoax, and again everybody reported on it, got really excited by it.
There've been the odd sort of dating app as well, like where again for reasons of sort of tawdry marketing, essentially you throw something out there that's on the face of it ridiculous, and then you get reaction, and then actually the true story is below the line becomes the actual story, I suppose.
Yeah.
So let's talk about these three stages of virality then, because I suppose the most viral story this week would have been, what do we call him, Professor Dad?
Professor Kelly. This is the much nicer aspect of viral stories. Because
this was completely organic, right?
Or was it?
Well, yeah, this is the point. So I don't really know if I need to... outline it.
Tell the story anyway.
But Professor Kelly, expert on Korean geopolitics. Can there be Korean geopolitics? Are they not? Anyway, Korean politics. He was talking about the impeachment of the South Korean president on BBC Live over Skype. And while he was talking about something very serious, his four-year-old daughter comes barreling in through the door, doing a funny little dance, which is just adorable.
It's making me laugh just thinking about it.
And she just wants to get involved in her dad's work. He sort of pushes her back fairly violently. And then the eight-month-old son comes barreling
just
in afterwards.
Swoops in his walker.
In, little walker. And then the best bit is when Professor Kelly's wife comes in, tries to be surreptitious. She's like kneeling, so she's below the level of the camera, but you can see her. And she yanks them both out and then closes the door with just her little arm poking through. And this is great, and everybody loves it.
It is like, without any hint of cynicism, it is one of the funniest things I've seen this year.
It's a real sort of pure enjoyment.
I was away skiing last week with my girlfriend and her family, like various people that I know a little bit. And this video, I watched it, and it did the entire rounds, and everyone found it utterly hilarious.
Well, because actually, there was something quite joyful about it as well. And then, and then maybe you're going to talk about this, David, but subsequently, Professor Kelly's talked about... Because they had to, the family, poor family's privacy actually was invaded to the extent that they had to talk about it. But he was saying that his daughter just celebrated her birthday at kindergarten, and she was, in his words, in a hippity hoppity mood. And there was just something so joyful about the way the child walks into the room that you'd have to have a heart of stone not to find it hilarious.
Oh, no, it's wonderful. And anyone who has kids knows how little they respect professional boundaries. But then, you know, there is that element as well, as you said, that you sort of think, well, you know, what if it had turned out to be staged? What if there was some subterfuge? And I think that...
Well, it didn't do his profile any bad...
But it might have done. I mean, I think, like, if you know, from his perspective, you can see in the clip and then subsequently in the interview he did, I think it was to the Wall Street Journal, but it was quoted wildly elsewhere, like that he really thought, because an important part of his role as a Western person working as a professor in a South Korean university is publicity and promotion, and he kind of thought he'd screwed over his contact with the BBC through it. So he thought that like his career had been materially damaged by this thing, as it happens, because who doesn't like a nice, happy family scene? You know, he will probably have to work a little bit to get beyond being that guy, but he now is known, so he probably has done him some good. But
and he will be installing a lock on his office from the inside.
That is the thing I like about him most, is that he has consistently said it was his fault. Whereas anyone else in that situation, I mean, I certainly would have blamed my children, possibly my wife.
Or your wife, yeah.
But she made the best of it.
So this like properly went through all the stages of virality, didn't it? There was the initial like joyousness.
Yeah.
Then
the backlash.
The backlash. Then there was the backlash to the backlash.
Then there was the Guardian think piece.
Yeah. Then there was the scandal over whether people commenting on the video were being racist because...
Yeah, well
this happened in our
nanny.
Office, didn't it? Yeah, like one of our colleagues said, well, maybe it's the nanny. I think, it has to be said, principally on the basis of the fact that she was Korean in ethnicity.
Well, like probably most people watching the video didn't know the context.
Yeah, completely.
So like there's no way to know on first watching that he is based in Korea because you're basically thrown into this from like minute one, and it's a Skype call, so you can't like, and then people are starting to comment on the ethnicity of the children, which is a very slippery slope, and it just all gets very comment sectiony basically, which is not a nice place to be often.
Well, that's the other aspect of virality, isn't it, is that it opens it up to everybody and the worst excesses of the internet come into play.
It kind of reminded me a bit of the Boston bombing in a way, where everyone became a detective all of a sudden, and then and then like Reddit
that
suddenly
Reddit
becomes like a load of people wildly speculating on their ethnicity, who they are. They start picking out details, and it just becomes the Wild West, which is fine. Like that's the internet; people can do that. But when it has an actual like impact, then that's when it gets a bit dangerous.
I think as long as you understand the context again, so to go back to the point about is it fake or not. I think if that clip had, I don't think it is fake, if it had have been fake, it would have had devastating consequences, because the reason why people liked it and it was interesting was it was this kind of really authentic picture of a family's life, whereas the FaceSam thing is quite a calculated means of getting people to talk about something. Part of the point of it is that it's fake and it's necessarily exposed as being fake at some points. The other thing I found about the virality of Professor Dad was the timing of it was really interesting. So we all sit in an office staring at screens all day, so it stands to reason that it was picked up fairly easy by someone, and they shared it on our Slack feed. So we were all looking at it, I think, let's say on Friday morning, if that's when it was. 2 days later, people were sharing it into my various feeds. It's really interesting to see how information like that is shared. It was picked up. The thing that was first shown to me was on the website joe.co.uk. But very quickly it was on all the nationals, and some people were sharing that. It's just really interesting how that kind of information is disseminated, and also how people pick it up in waves.
Well, you get a hierarchy of it, and it's very difficult not to feel a bit elitist, a bit snobbish.
Yes, I have time to look at all the crap on the internet.
I saw this 2 days ago when it's just you happen to be on Slack. Whereas they're looking...
Instead of having something meaningful to do with your life.
Yeah,
I saw it way before all the ambulance drivers and surgeons, losers.
GPs were really slow on this one.
I suppose there's something to be said with the hoaxes and the virality stuff, that the way that it has now affected news and the film industry and the music industry, the way that things now are evaluated on the basis of how readily they are shared. I don't think it would be too much of a stretch to say that Donald Trump's success is an extension of his virality. The fact that he says things that are either outrageous and then you share them, or they are something that you agree with and he's willing to say, and again people share it, and he has understood the currency of the sharing economy more than any other politician.
Well, it's not about exactly. If you want to resonate, if the currency is people noticing you, being in the middle and being rational and being even-handed, are not good ways of doing that, whereas being outrageous means you will definitely be noticed either way. And given that apathy is a big issue in democracy, in established democracy anyway, that does mean you're likely to get your full share of people who might share in your opinions or your expressed opinions. So you're likely to poll well, I guess. Okay. Let's go around the room. Virol's well that ends well. Or we're in Via Straits. David Price.
I think we're in Via Straits.
Ooh, Scott Carey.
Virol's well that ends well.
Yeah, I think I'm more on Scott's side on this. But we'll see if the world ends. Before then, we'll take a short break and we'll come back to talk about Yahoo.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Yahoo, push pineapple, shake the tree. Scott Carey, Yahoo, which still exists, is reducing its intake of M&Ms. Explain.
Yeah, it's the end of the road for Marissa Mayer. Probably the most high-profile female tech CEO of all time, I'd say.
Yeah, I think so. Can't think of anyone comparable.
No, I mean, Sheryl Sandberg at Facebook, but she's not a CEO. Can't think of it.
Does Arianna Huffington count?
No, I'd consider her a media. But fair enough, good effort. Her time as CEO of Yahoo has finished after just short of 5 years. Let's not all weep for her though, because she walks away with $23 million in severance. She was already one of the most highly paid CEOs in Silicon Valley.
And she was employee 20 of Google.
She was employee of 20. And this is actually one thing that I was going to get to a bit later, but I'll get to now, is a lot of people sort of have reveled in Marissa Mayer's failings for the past sort of 5 years. There's always, people have been very quick to jump on her, been very quick to criticise her. At the beginning, she was an extremely well-regarded hire. It was seen as very progressive from Yahoo, a company that very much needed sort of an injection of imagination. It needed to turn itself around. It was massively in decline. And Marissa Mayer was already an extremely wealthy woman. Like, she was employee 20 at Google. She basically needed a new challenge rather than she needed the money, which Yahoo probably saw as a good thing. They probably saw it as a reason why she could be that sort of injection.
Well, they needed to make decisions, and arguably, certainly initially, did make decisions that wouldn't necessarily lead to greater short-term profitability, but led to longer-term, relevance, actually. Yeah. And certainly in the early years, in terms of share price, she had quite a positive impact.
Yeah, she did. And some of that may have just been the sort of the wellspring of sort of good intentions towards her. People basically thought that she might have had the chops to turn the company around, and she made a lot of sort of high profile moves.
She bought Tumblr,
which again is something I'll get to in a bit, actually, because it's quite an important sort of milestone in her tenure there.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Made some huge moves on the media side, which never really paid dividends. She started hiring some sort of big time celebrities to come and work for Yahoo Media, even though we all know that the media makes no money, so that wasn't really going to have an effect on the bottom line. But the main problem with her sort of tenure just seems to be that she, as you said, she would always come out with these like really good sounding ideas. She would talk about strategy, she would talk about the direction of the company, bring it back to relevance, bring it back to its heyday. But that would change too often. Yeah. So there would too often be these sort of zigzags in strategy. And in the end, it sort of became death by a million cuts.
Yeah, and that is a classic story for an organisation that has grown hugely, been very successful, and then just tipped over. Because it's very difficult to describe what Yahoo is these days. It used to be this huge portal, email, kind of a lot of the things that Google does. But what is it now? And, you know, from the CEO perspective, it is easy to be critical because on the face of it, you know, it's largely been a failure. But it's also extremely difficult to create that vision and then implement it in a huge organisation, which Yahoo is.
And Yahoo's been in trouble for way longer than Marissa May has been in charge. It's been in trouble basically since the dot-com boom. And the reason for that is that, as you said, it's difficult to define them, but they are essentially an advertising company. They make most of their money from display advertising, search advertising.
Yeah.
The problem for Yahoo is that those are both industries in decline, and eyeballs and advertising dollars have all gone, have very much gone towards mobile, and Yahoo just failed to like jump onto that bandwagon in time. So she basically was captaining a sinking ship and was charged with finding a new way of making money, either by leveraging what they had already into maybe mobile or whatever the next thing was, or by creating a whole new revenue stream in itself. And I definitely argue that it would have taken a monumental effort to do something like that. I mean, a Steve Jobsian sort of turnaround or like product or
the less sexy version, which I've talked about before, which is Microsoft, actually.
Yeah.
Which, look, for all that Steve Ballmer is a maniac, I don't mean literally, just in case anybody legally is listening, but you know, he's perceived as being this kind of loose cannon figure. Whether it was him, but on his watch, Microsoft went from a company that sold products, all of whose products weren't very good, to being this enterprise giant that it is now, hugely profitable company, still with problems, but has managed to make that transition, albeit from a stronger base than Yahoo ever did. Mm. And yeah, Steve Jobs, incredible performance there. But I mean, one of the frustrations with Yahoo is that before Marissa Mayer went there, they had purchased Alibaba, which is this e-commerce giant from Asia. And, you know, there's an obvious thing, which we know ourselves, actually, which is if you have an audience and display advertising is your principal way of monetizing that, you need to move away from display advertising because that's a race to the bottom. But e-commerce is a very good way of monetizing that audience.
Yeah.
And yet somehow they haven't, again, they still quite haven't managed to tie it all together. And at one point it looked like they were doing that in Marissa Mayer's early years. And again, it seems to have fallen away, really.
It kind of became a bit of an albatross around her neck, the Alibaba thing, because it actually started to become bigger than Yahoo, because it became such a valuable stake. So I think, trying to sort of amalgamate the two in a sort of weird way, the way that The Guardian was always propped up by Auto Trader for years. And it's sort of, once that goes, or once that sort of outgrows you, it's very difficult to then get back to what your core business is.
Well, unless, like, for instance, I mean, The Guardian's no one's idea of an extremely well-run commercial operation, but there is a reason for The Guardian to exist that is outside of commerce. So if the Auto Trader props it up, that's actually something that can be understood culturally within the organisation, kind of thing, whereas Yahoo exists to make money.
Yeah.
There's no kind of editorial line that Yahoo's trying to sell or great journalism that it's trying to do, or if it is, that's not its integral reason for being.
Yeah.
She was also not an uncontroversial manager.
No, so her legacy really will come down to sort of her overall leadership and the way that she spent money. So as a manager, she actually wasn't, by the end of her tenure, she wasn't particularly well liked in the organisation. It's difficult to separate the CEO from the failings of the company.
Yeah.
If you're at a company that isn't doing particularly well, you're obviously not going to be particularly happy. And the way that you display that is by not being very happy with the CEO. But she did. She made several gaffes in her time. There was the major one was when she basically just blanket banned working from home.
Yeah.
Which went down extremely badly, both with employees and with the media. It just could have been done in such a much more finessed way.
Yeah, I mean, I think she clearly recognised there was an issue, whatever the issue was. But yeah, just saying, and actually in quite a sort of holier-than-thou way, and you know, there were blogs about this, and there was kind of a nobody can, as they say in the States, telecommute. Was just inept, because even if that was the right decision for that organisation, it just was communicated in such a way that it would have clearly alienated anybody who's ever worked from home.
Well, it's just the sort of policy that you can't blanket on, because it, like, the idea of working from home tends to be very much regarding like personal circumstances. So you have to be a little bit more flexible with your workers. And it just, yeah, it just showed sort of a...
It's interesting how history has recorded that, though, because I remember when that first happened and she first did it, I remember our UK CEO here forwarding it round to managers and saying, you know, we should think about doing this. Cause, so like, initially there was this kind of halo effect around the fact that she'd said it as a Silicon Valley CEO. Relatively quickly, I think other people in similar roles were kind of like, because, you know, it needs policing and it needs to be managed right, but you also need to employ the right people and trust them. And often there are certain jobs where it might be more effective to do it from home.
What was her justification for saying you couldn't work?
She wanted to foster more collaboration within the organisation. Yeah. She wanted to basically get people meeting face to face more. It came down to this thing that she wanted to create more new product lines and sort of like start producing things in house that would bring in revenue rather than relying on their sort of.
I find this really interesting as well, though, because she is a very bright person who went to Stanford and really excelled. I mean, like was a proper sort of smart person coming out of Stanford. Which
I think she was a good engineer.
Was then actively, you know, when I graduated, nobody was knocking the door down to recruit me after my degree in English and drama from the University of Hull. She was actively, you know, sought out by McKinsey and various big organisations, and actually took a bit of a risk going to be employee 20 at Google, although that's when you take a risk when you've just graduated. But I wonder if she missed a bit of her career in a weird way, because any manager in the world knows if you want to foster more creativity, if the goal is get people together more often, what you do is you get people together more often. Yeah. You don't ban them from not being together, which is exactly what has happened there. And I understand as a CEO it's difficult to directly control these things, but you have to understand culture and how to change culture, and it has to be a positive thing rather than you cannot work from home.
Yeah.
Even if that was fully implemented and embraced by everyone, it's you could still not work from home and not have any more meaningful meetings with your colleagues. Mm.
And the blowback there, fairly or unfairly, was always tinged by the fact that she had just completed her first stint of maternity leave.
Yep.
She just had her first son. She now has three kids. She has twins as well. But she famously only took 2 weeks of maternity leave.
Yeah.
She had just joined Yahoo, actually. And then any time that she made sort of a personnel decision, it was always reported in the media alongside that decision, or it was tinged.
And there
by
is
that.
Sexism there. Because
yeah, and I'm going to say that, like, sitting here as three blokes, I'm going to tread quite carefully. But I always feel like it was extremely unfair the way that people reacted to that. And there were some extremely sort of attack-minded pieces towards her, like, as a person, as a mother, regarding that decision. And
it's horrible. That whole thing is horrible, and there's a culture of it, and it's difficult to put your name on it. And as you say, as a man, it's difficult to talk about it, but you've got to call it out. There is sexism there.
Mm.
There is sexism. I mean, like, there have been cases where men have sued Yahoo for sexism, which are patently absurd, but they do speak to a culture in which, you know, let's face it, some people just don't like the fact that there's a woman in this position of power. Mm. You know, yeah, I think banning working from home was just an inept thing to do. But the fact that she'd just come back from maternity leave is totally irrelevant.
Yeah. You know,
the fact that she had, that she used to bring her baby son to work with her.
Yeah, she had like a creche next door to her.
Okay, office. I mean, not everyone's in the situation to be able to do that. And again, I can understand how it feels a bit tin-eared that she's doing that while saying to people they can't work from home. Mm. But at the same time, it's like, if it was a man doing that, no one would mention it. So
David's pulling a face.
It does seem... Oh, you're right, we do have to be careful what we say, but this is exactly it, is that she did give the impression, and I know a lot less about her than either of you, which is why I've been so quiet, but the impression you get from the outside is that she was this sort of grand dame on top. You know, she had these stupid parties where she dressed as Marie Antoinette, and she was unapproachable and a celebrity CEO.
Yep.
And the fact that she thought it was okay to control other people's work-life balance to that extent, and yet it was okay for her to do whatever she wanted. And of course, it is all right for her to do whatever she wanted, but it should also be.
But I think the point is, she came back to work 2 weeks after she had her child.
Yeah, and so she had that standard for herself that nobody else could do.
Completely,
normal people can't.
So it was insane. It was a stupid thing for her to do, but it was not about gender. That's the point.
No, but it is. I think there is an element of.
But it was always seen through the prism of gender. Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Mm. Just, you know, go on with her sort of legacy, because there's a few sort of important sort of tenets. But you mentioned Tumblr earlier, and her acquisition, her M&A strategy was an absolute unmitigated disaster.
Yahoo is the kind of benchmark gold standard for terrible acquisitions.
And they were bad. They were bad at this before her. Like, I think it was either the CEO before her, or the one before him, who acquired Kelku for tons of money, and that didn't end well for them.
I mean, Tumblr was over $1 billion, right?
Tumblr was her biggest acquisition. It was $1.1 billion. They've already written off half the value of that since then. So 4 years on, it's not looking like it's going to get any better, really, is it? From sort of a cultural standpoint, but her acquisition strategy was probably the right thing to do. Like, strategically, I think making some smart acquisitions, like, you look at Facebook acquiring, like, Instagram, and that was an extremely good acquisition, and they probably wanted to bring in something like that, a new product which they could monetize themselves from within the building. The problem is she brought in 53 companies, and 41 of those have since closed.
Well, these are the ones with all the funny names that you're talking
Bread.
About. Bread.
Yeah, everyone loves Bread. I can't even remember what Bread did. I mean, but the problem is most of these acquisitions were just for the people at the companies. They were very small startups generally. And some of them, you know, brought in decent ideas into the building. Like, they do some, like, programmatic advertising at Yahoo, which was thanks to an acquisition. Some of their mobile stuff was via acquisition. They did some, like, developer tools. You know, so it was smart little moves, but none of them really sort of achieved what they wanted to achieve in terms of giving them, like, a second sort of thing in their arsenal, really, that they could monetize. And Tumblr was the one that she really wanted to work like that, and it just didn't happen. So, spending-wise, fairly frivolous and just a little bit scattergun, a little bit like her strategy in general, really.
Yeah.
And have they said who's going to be the next...
Well, the problem is Yahoo is disappearing. It's turning into Alitaba or something. I can't remember the exact name, but basically it's being, once Verizon closed the deal, it's basically being rebranded, and it will just be the advertising business, which still makes billions of dollars. So we don't know who will be the next CEO. A lot of the board has been culled, like the CFO left. The CRO, Lisa Utzschneider, was paid $16 million in severance as well, which is absolutely insane considering she joined a year ago.
Wow.
And she was already the highest paid CRO in Silicon Valley.
Sales.
And that's
Chief
the weirdest
Revenue
thing.
Officer.
Yeah, Chief Revenue Officer. Which shows how important that was to them to try and basically sort out their revenue sources. And then the last big sort of caveat to Mayer's tenure, fairly or unfairly, will be the massive security breaches. And I wrote this the other day, and obviously Marissa Mayer isn't in charge of security at Yahoo. She has, like, a CISO and stuff like that. But if two of the biggest security breaches in the history of the internet happen on your watch, you're probably doing something wrong.
Yeah. And you're responsible. Don't take the salary if you don't take the responsibility.
Yeah, and she's already sacrificed her last annual bonus because of the breaches and because of the massive... $350 million discount that Verizon got off the deal because of the breaches. As an aside, the US Justice Department actually has indicted four Russian hackers today over the hack, which is the first time they've ever gone after Russians directly for a hack. They often suspect them, but they don't actually say that it was them.
Good.
Yes.
On a macro level as well, like there is apparently this, it's kind of unspoken, but because she institutionalised a practice which is prevalent in a lot of Silicon Valley companies, but this idea of firing the 15% who are working least effectively, promoting the 15% who are working most effectively. And again, this is quite tin-eared, but it was actually written down, and it became part of the management practice that everyone had to assess every employee, and yes. You literally got rid of the 15%.
I can't remember what they called it. It was like a merit-based...
Yeah.
The cull.
Well, this is the problem, because it's pretty much what happens in these kind of high-performing Silicon Valley companies, but if you make it part of the legitimised, written-down practice, you leave yourself open to legal... recompense.
Yeah, and it's culturally fairly poisonous.
Yeah, and again, that's another part of the legacy.
Yeah.
Okay, but it's funny because as you started off saying, Scott, here's someone who is a very high profile woman, very successful, very bright woman, and unfortunately, mainly because of failure, actually, the perception isn't great of her performance, and unfortunately, that's grist to the mill of. Let's face it, sexist constituency who, you know, see that through the prism of gender.
It will be extremely interesting to me to see what she does next, because there is no obvious path anymore.
Yeah.
Like, she's gone from wonder kid to failed CEO. So she's basically at the top there. And
reality TV.
Yeah. Oh, like, it. I just really don't know.
President.
Oh, God, no. She could be...
Carly Fiorina did that.
Actually, she could be Zuckerberg's running mate.
Ooh.
That's horrifying, utterly horrifying. I wish I'd never said that. I have literally no idea what she will do next. She'll probably take some time. She'll probably count her $23 million of severance.
She could give us a million, couldn't she?
She's an extremely, extremely wealthy woman, so she doesn't have to do anything, but I can't imagine at her age that she will stop working.
Is she?
She is
75 birth, I think, so a bit older than me, 41, 42.
Yeah, early 40s.
Not old enough to retire.
That's old enough to retire.
Yeah, I wish. Good, let's go around the room. Yahoo or Yaboo sucks? Scott Carey.
Yaboo sucks.
David Price.
Yaboo sucks.
Goes without saying.
Thank you, listener, for listening to this edition of the UK Tech Weekly podcast. Do get in touch, let us know your thoughts and opinions. You can tweet us at UK Tech Podcast or email editor@idg.co.uk. We will be back next week with more informed and uninformed opinion on the hottest topics in tech. Until then, say goodbye, guys.
Bye.
Goodbye.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.